RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
We first started talking about the issue that Ian Wishart has come on to talk about on the 22nd of March last year. So this has been bubbling away for quite a while. Ian joined us back then to discuss the realities of climate propaganda and his recent research, as it was then, on that subject that resulted in his report, Climate of Fear, NIWA's Missing Storm Data and Its Impact. And this followed Cyclone Gabrielle. Then he came back and updated us in May last year, and he was back with us in February with yet another update on his article, Too Hot to Handle. It was in February, NIWA's Missing Temperature Records. And then in late March, he was here as well telling us about NIWA's blocking of his Privacy Act bid and a cherry-picking data admission. You can see there's been a long trail of this from March 2023 all the way to now. Ian is back again to discuss, this time, suspicions that NIWA has misled Parliament in relation to the missing storm data in the Climate of Fear study, that bombshell report from last year. And Ian is here following his latest piece in The Centrist, published on the 12th. Has NIWA misled Parliament? Climate Agency feels the heat after OIA dump. Investigative journalist Ian Wishart is back with us again for another round. Ian, thank you for coming on today.
Like a dog with a bone, mate.
Yeah, I can see why you didn't probably want to let this one go, right? And I mean, we'll get to it in just a moment, and I'll ask you just to quickly, for listeners who may not be right up with the play, to just quickly recount that original article and then the efforts you went to following that. But first, I've got to get your opinion on what happened in Pennsylvania. Donald Trump, very close, so close. Mind-blowing, but some would say probably not surprising. So reaction to that, Ian?
Yeah, what was interesting was that it was literally a miraculous escape for him, because the video shows that he turns his head just at the last moment, and obviously the shooter missed him, a direct headshot and grazed his ear. So that was fortunate for Trump, not so fortunate for the people behind him who got shot.
Yeah,
but the shooter has been reportedly identified as a 20-year-old Pennsylvania Gen Zer.
So okay, yeah.
So we're talking about young people really, you know, taking politics way too far, if that's the case.
Yeah, this could be argued that certain media kind of whipped this frenzy up probably a long time ago. Is that your sort of gut feel on the issue?
Yeah, it's commensurate with a general rise in anger in the community on all sides, and it's rhetoric that we have to be careful of. It's the othering of groups and individuals that don't fit our worldview, and this is the correlation to that. If this doesn't turn out to be an organised event, which it doesn't look like at this stage, then it's just about, you know, winding people up so far that they just take ideas into their head and execute them, so to speak. In this case, the incident has, I think, delivered Donald Trump the presidency for the second time. The Ronald Reagan had an 8% boost in the polls after an attempt on his life in 1981, and Trump has long played the swamps out to get me card. And this is a case of, you know, an attempt on his life for whatever reason. And the Trump team will make the most of that. It really is an example of people not thinking about the consequences of their actions. I mean, we saw it with Posey Parker last year in the Albert Park protest, where the photograph of Posey covered in fruit juice and looking defiant became an iconic image of that event. And it led to a backlash that the group that was responsible for it didn't anticipate. In the same way, Trump, I guess, showing none of the cognitive issues that Biden had, was able to react almost instantly to this assassination attempt and create, fortuitously, a photo moment with the flag, raising his fist defiantly, the example being set that he is an example of strength and has his wits about him and that he's leading the fight politically. So he's capitalised on this, and it just cements in the eyes of the American public the fact that there's such a strong gap now between the two candidates. I don't see this going well for the Democrats, and I think the media reaction on this is telling as well. You're getting increasingly opinion writers around the world saying effectively what I'm saying now, which is that this has changed the election for good.
Yeah. I saw a few reports on X, as you do when you sort of you realize this has happened and you go, what the, you know, WTF, looking around. And in Times Square, it wasn't the video or none of it was being shown on the big screen in Times Square at that point. So I guess the suggestion that there was some kind of censorious approach to it. The other thing is there'll have to be investigations, won't there, Ian, into how someone can get on. I looked at, you know, the SAT pick of the area where he was delivering the address, and the shooter was only about 125 yards away on the roof of a building that you'd think would be, you know, looked into, combed with the Secret Service people before the event. So there will be questions. And I'm also thinking, and remember the TVNZ breakfast people flying around with guns and Trump that time? That hasn't aged very well now, has it?
No, that's right. And X is resurrecting the tweets about President Biden reportedly telling donors that there was a bullseye on Trump now. And so all of this rhetoric and the build-up of how dangerous he is to democracy and all the rest of it is what I think feeds into the younger generation in a way. You know, when you look at the school strike for climate issues, our young people are being wound up like nothing ever before. And, I mean, in our day, there was a threat of nuclear war and we were all scared we're going to be bombed to smithereens. But that was our existential threat. These days, it's a bit closer to home, and the existential threat is not over the Berlin Wall. It's here amongst us, and we are arguing amongst ourselves. So the danger is how we step back from this, and I'm not sure that the mainstream media can, because they're the ones with a lot of the mouthpiece rhetoric winding it up and trying to stake out their positions and insisting on politicising young people. If this Trump shooting turns out to be a lone wolf, 20-year-old Gen Zer Democrat voting who just thinks I've got to do something to change the move the dial, then it exemplifies exactly the problem that we're facing, which is we're weaponizing our own population.
You know, I wonder, just quick before we're off this, any thoughts on what the Dems do now with Biden? He's, you know, hanging in there up to the moment that this happened. Who knows what now? And if so, who do they replace him with, or do they just give up now? Because there's just no way, unless there's voter fraud on a huge scale, that Trump can lose, surely, with imagery like that of, you know, you couldn't ask. I mean, it's a terrible thing, but the imagery of him standing up there with the flag, the bloodied ear, the pumped fist, it's just gold for him.
The position that they're voting on is commander-in-chief at the end of the day, and you have a stark contrast between the two candidates. Donald Trump comes out of this looking like a commander-in-chief in waiting, and Joe Biden is looking anything but a commander-in-chief at the moment. For whatever reason, and I think his family are mainly responsible for continuing the push to keep him in the race. So the voters, I think, you know, even some reports this week prior to this shooting incident have suggested that Democrat donors are saying, well, actually we can live with Trump as president, but we can't live with somebody who's got dementia on the nuclear button.
No, I think a lot of us would go along with that, actually. All right, moving on to Niwa and what I introed to your appearance today with. I think I remember you saying that it would probably, you'll probably unearth something like this. But first of all, before we go into that, can you just remind our listeners exactly what that original piece was about that led to where we are now?
Yeah, to make it easy for people, this is a story that we're just breaking in Centrist over the weekend. Centrist.co.nz, and it has a link to the old study that I'm about to talk about, which is called Climate of Fear. And that was the one that I pulled out in March last year, which is looking at the storm data in New Zealand, the historical storm data in the wake of Cyclone Gabriel. And very simply, what I did was I went through the old newspapers, papers past, searching for terms like storm and barometer readings and the like to cross-reference everything and get an idea as to what New Zealand's climate was like before carbon dioxide became an issue and when it was actually about a degree and a half colder than it is now. And the surprising thing about the Climate of Fear study was that we found that in just 22 years, between 1868 and 1890, there were 24 major storms the size of Cyclone Bola or bigger that struck New Zealand in the 22 years. So that's an average of more than one a year. Five of those storms were bigger than Cyclone Gabriel, so about one every 4 years. And we haven't seen a cyclone the size of Cyclone Gabriel or Cyclone Bola in decades in New Zealand, not since the Wahine storm. So it gives you an idea that in our colder, low carbon past, there was a lot more rough weather than we have now. So no matter how bad it is at the moment, it was a lot worse back when it was cold and with low carbon. So when that report came out, NIWA were asked by the minister's office in the wake of requests from media, what's the story with this? Is there any data missing? Because the Climate of Fear study found that these storms did not exist for the most part in NIWA data records. And therefore, the flow on from that is that if NIWA doesn't know about these storms and they don't know about our past climate, and they can't advise government and councils appropriately. So I put an official information at request into NIWA at the start of the year. They initially turned around and said, we can't do a search for the words Ian Wishart in our database, which in the 21st century with computers and Microsoft, you know, everybody, we all know that's a load of cobblers. So over the last few months, I've gotten them to go away and do their homework a bit harder. They came back with a 900-page document drop, which dropped on the centrist last week. And what those documents show is that when NIWA received the Climate of Fear publicity, the senior management at NIWA did not request any audit or fact check of that report to see what data was actually missing based on the allegations in the report. Now, the report lays out in chapter and verse which storms they are, what dates they occurred on, and how big they were, and all the weather data necessary to identify them. NIWA never did the homework. Their problem arises because the minister, Aisha Verrill, was asked to comment. She asked NIWA, what's the story? Is any data missing? NIWA responded, no data's missing, and we're on top of it. It's all good. The minister then had two parliamentary questions she had to answer, which involve giving accurate answers to Parliament. And her response was, no official climate records have been lost, and NIWA is in control, which just wasn't true, because it turns out in this 900-page document dump, there's not one document that shows that NIWA management ever read this Climate of Fear study, let alone analysed the storms that were missing. So they made a statement when they'd never done the work to back it up.
We can only speculate as to why that would be. Yeah, they'd be curious about what you'd written, you'd think, just in case it, you know, personally involved them, you know, you'd think.
Well, you'd think so. And as I see it, there are only two possibilities. One is that they didn't do the work, as I'm suggesting in the centrist.co.nz story, and that they haven't analysed it. Basically, in my view, from sheer hubris or incompetence. Or the other option is that they have done the work, but they've hidden the report and not released it under the Official Information Act. But the problem with that second option is that if they'd done a core analysis of the Climate of Fear study, you would expect its shadow to appear in the other documents they released. You'd expect there to be references to this other analysis. There are none, not to the minister, not to anybody else. So I'm tending to believe pretty strongly that they never did the work, full stop.
Right. is that hubris more than anything else, do you think?
I think that's going to become an issue for the politicians and the officials who run the public service to get to the bottom of, because at the end of the day, we're alleging in the centre story that NIWA has effectively misled Parliament, which is a punishable offence for them because they've given an answer when they haven't done the research to check it. And the problem for them is that there's possibly going to be some accountability for that, because you can't have government agencies ask to brief ministers and comment to Parliament who feed effectively false information to the legislature, because that can lead to all sorts of drama and mistakes being made in the public service. So they can't let this one go unchecked. So we've asked NIWA to respond to these allegations, and they admit that they've got the questions. They have so far not commented. And it's been nearly a week since we sent the questions to them.
Wow. Okay. So even if it was just hubris and choosing not to read something because it was too beneath them, but advising the minister of a particular thing, that shows a recklessness, doesn't it? Totally, and very unprofessional. But if it's anything deeper than that, how can anything they say be credible?
That's a very good point, Paul, and it's something that people need to take on board. If we can't trust our government agencies, particularly our leading climate research agency, to tell us the truth, then that affects public trust in the democratic process. And it's part of the wider issue that the whole Trump shooting, I guess, is part of as well. This loss of public faith in the political process. There are so many things that the wheels are falling off, the cogs are getting jammed. And it's through little things like this. But if we don't pick up on it and hammer them home, and we don't correct these errors, then we end up with all sorts of tensions down the track. Because in the case of climate science, huge amounts of public money and subsidies are being paid out to favoured groups, lobby groups and so forth, and green industrial complex companies making solar energy and the like. And if the NIWA aren't doing their research, then how much public money is being wasted? And that's something the voters need to take into consideration. So this is a credibility check for not just the previous government, which in my view was actually misled by NIWA, but for the current government, which now has the task of sorting this out.
Yeah, and policy is made using that information, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you go back to the base premise of the Climate of Fear article, which again is linked to from the centrist side, the storms in our past were worse, far worse than the storms we've endured in the last couple of years, and far more frequent. So it calls into question the idea that a warmer climate leads to more rough weather. It doesn't appear to it. It appears to lend to quieter weather. But the advice that NIWA is doing and the research they're doing, if it's not taking this into account, means that councils have been given the wrong information about adaptability, about the costs and the likelihood of future storm events. All of that is a massive risk to public funding and public resources. It affects homeowners. It affects all of us. They have to get the stuff right, and they haven't done the work.
And do we know if Met Service or the Weather Office, whatever they're called now, has that data, that historical data? I might have asked you at the time, but I can't quite remember. Do they have that data? Because they've been around for a while, haven't they?
They do have records, but they NIWA was split off from the Met Service in 1992, and it took with it a lot of the records for the climate study purposes. So the Met Service was supposed to be concentrating on current weather, and NIWA was supposed to do the background research. But in 30-odd years, they've never done proper research, in my view, on our historical climate. So they're prepared to flick on a computer model, but computer models are plagued by the garbage in, garbage out problem. So if NIWA don't enter the right data because they don't have it, then their modelling is crap.
Yeah, and it leaves, I'm sort of banging the same thing on and on here, but it it makes you wonder if it's done for political messaging purposes more than, you know, for the sake of climate science, let's say.
Yeah, well, there certainly seems to be a focus on boosting public fear of climate change and using all the examples they can to get public cooperation, just like they did through the COVID issue. And, you know, the Climate Affairs Study and the Too Hot to Handle report and this latest article are all effectively about holding NIWA's feet to a flame and saying, get your research right, tell us the truth about New Zealand's past, then we can debate the likelihood of bad weather in the future and whether it's more likely or less likely based on the trend line and what we should do about it. But if you don't do that work, we're all flying blind and you're spending our money.
Yeah. All right, so what happens next in your mind on this, Ian? What are you waiting for as the next move?
Well, we've got questions into NIWA and politicians. I think others need to do the same to put the pressure on them and ask for an explanation. In my opinion, if NIWA hasn't done the research and didn't read the report or analyse the storm data before assuring Parliament there was nothing in it, then heads should roll, in my view, because you have to make the public service accountable. And if our politicians don't do that, then we're still left with a real big problem.
Yeah. Ian Wishart, great work, and thanks for coming on and updating us and taking us through that, and also for your opinions on what happened yesterday with Trump, and we're all still processing that. And I look forward to maybe getting an update on things as the time comes again.
All the best, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.